Stop the genocides. Contact your representatives, sign petitions, educate yourself, and hold uncomfortable conversations. Make a financial donation. Amplify Palestinian and other oppressed voices on social media. Follow those social media creators who stand for anti-oppression liberation, even in the coordinated and deliberate effort to silence their voices. You are listening to True Kinship with Animals, where we believe we all do better when all creatures do better. I'm your host, Janet Roper, identifying as she, they, and supported and sustained on Salish and Pend'Oreille land. This podcast gives you stories, conversations, and suggestions on how you can deepen your relationship with animals by freeing yourself from the inherited, colonized beliefs and assumptions we've all been socialized into. You will begin relating to animals through a new place of understanding because you have grown beyond society's expectations of how animals, air quotes, should be treated. This episode is brought to you in its entirety by me, Janet Roper. I create everything you hear on the True Kinship with Animals podcast. I am the researcher, writer, editor, host, producer, sound engineer, marketer, and social media creator and coordinator. There's an incredible amount of behind-the-scenes work that goes into crafting each episode. I want and need your help in the areas of financial contributions and social media engagement to continue laying the foundation for the ongoing project of introducing True Kinship with Animals to the world. You'll find my social media links and ways to financially support the work on the show page or visit janetroper.com. Your support makes this work sustainable and is both needed and appreciated. Content warning. On this episode, we're covering the death care, death, and dying of animal family members and the grief those of us left behind experience, human and animal. Death and grief don't take a break for the holidays. Should you choose to listen to this episode, be gentle with yourself. Listen if and when you are able. There are no shoulds in grief. With us today is guest Stacy Mason, sharing her true kinship life with animals, in particular with now angel cat Martha. Stacy lives in the beautiful state of North Carolina, her favorite parts being her home in Pittsburgh and anywhere in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Animals have been in her life since she was about 3 or 4, when the dog Gina came to live with her family and herself. Since age 25, she's closely shared her life with many cats, as well as dogs and horses. Hello, Stacy, and welcome to True Kinship with Animals today. It's a delight to see you here. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Janet. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Sometimes I think that people believe that true kinship with animals is all light and fluffy and, you know, rainbows and all that kind of good stuff. But true kinship with animals can also, I think, sometimes bring sadness and heartache and can bring a different kind of journey that we may expect when we first adopt the animal family. We've talked about the changes that have happened in your animal family. Would you care to share any of that with us?
Sure. So up until very recently, we had a pretty large animal family. We had 3 cats, a dog, and a horse named Brownie living here with us. And since September the 11th, we have lost Martha the cat, Brownie the horse, and Bama our dog was the most recent, and he passed just Friday.
Wow. That is a lot of change.
It's a lot of change. We have 2 remaining cats, little boy cats, Ollie and Teddy, mm-hmm. and they are completely unfazed by all of the changes.
And what do you attribute that to, that they're being unfazed?
I really don't know. They seem to be certainly in tune with our sadness, you know, sometimes the despondence that we feel, and they, you know, they'll certainly try and get our attention and want to be little jokesters and things like that. But as far, you know, they definitely don't mourn in the same way that people do. I feel like for them, death is a fact of life. and that's it.
I definitely hear what you're saying about that. My own experiences with animal family members passing and those animal family members left behind. Each one was really different. They seemed to take it in stride. They seemed to understand what was going on, and they seemed to want to support me in whatever way they could, with their own given personality kind of thing. And to me, there was a warmth and a harmony in that. So that's been, it's an enlightening experience, at the same time, very difficult, at the same time, at least that's the way I'm finding it. And at the same time, very heartwarming.
Yeah, it is. At first I was like, man, these two are just savages. Like, how are they not moved by any of this? But, they're just moved in different ways, I think. They've both adapted well, perhaps in their mind it's more resources for them. I don't know. I don't know specifically how they think about it. But, the two cats that we have remaining here, they were not super close with Martha anyway. They are each other's buddies. And Martha and I were buddies. That's how it broke down here at our house. So I think, they understand obviously that I'm upset about her passing. They've taken a couple of turns getting in my lap, which is not something that they did before. It was never available to them in their defense, but they do it on occasion now.
Are you open to sharing Martha's story? Here's in Martha's story.
Sure. So Martha came to our household as a soother for me, basically. I had lost another very, very beloved cat. His name was Julian, and he was a Velcro cat. He always wanted to be touching me. He always wanted to be where I was. So there was that close, physical and emotional relationship that I had with him. And so he became ill suddenly and died pretty quickly, and in a pretty unexplained way. So after that happened, I just felt so lonely. I was surrounded by people and animals, but I missed that connection, with another creature that I felt understood me better than anyone or anything else. So my husband said, we should go and we should find another cat. And I said, let's give it a little bit of time. I wasn't quite ready. And when I was ready, we went up to PetSmart, where our local rescues advertise their cats, if you will. And so we went in and, looked at all the cats, and they let us back in the cat room. And we saw these little black kittens in a pile. They were rambunctious and wild little kittens. And so we watched them play, and we quickly decided, maybe not a kitten. Not sure we have that kind of energy in this moment. And so, we peeked at a couple of other cats, and then I looked up, and just down the little hallway in the cat room, I saw this cute little petite black and white face poking out between the bars, watching us. And so I said, well, what about that one? And she said, the lady said, oh, yeah, I'll let her out. So she lets her out. As it turns out, those were her kittens that were playing and that we were observing, and she was watching us with her babies, I
Well, there you
guess,
go.
to make sure we were not hurting her babies. And so the kittens got put up, and Martha came out, and she climbed right into my husband's lap. Like, he was the one who needed to be convinced, and she knew it. So up she climbed, and I filled out the application, and he had to go to Europe for a business trip for about a week. And so while he was gone, I brought her home. Therefore, she bonded with me the first week. And the rest is kind of history. We were two peas in a pod. She was, I don't know where she came from. She came with some health issues, nothing, traumatic or anything, but she was very shy. She was very petite, and just a very sweet, sweet little cat, very sweet girl. And so we just sort of loved each other from that minute forward.
Love at first sight.
It was.
That is so cool. Do you care to share how your bond changed throughout the years?
Sure. At first she was very young. I don't know how young she was, maybe two, I guess, when we adopted her into our home. And I had another female cat in the house, Miss Jessie, who wanted no part of Martha coming to live with us. So the house quickly turned into a vomitorium. There's a lot of crying, a lot of cat barf all over the house. But after several weeks, everybody settled in and they learned how to share space together. I think Martha probably came from a place where there were other adult cats because she seemed to want to have some kind of a relationship with Miss Jessie, but Miss Jessie was just really not that interested. So they compromised, learned how to share, the sofa and, perches and things like that, but they never cuddled or anything like that. So that was the beginning, just trying to get Miss Jessie to please be nice to the new cat in the house and stop vomiting on all of my rugs. And, for many, many years, it was just, your typical sweet relationship. If I sat down anywhere in the house for 30 seconds or more, she found me and got in my lap. She had some kind of radar, I think. And she would know that I was stationary and she would always come and jump up and she would just lay on my chest with her paws up sort of under my chin around my throat and she, would rub her face on my chin or my face or my coffee cup or whatever. Whatever was there. And we spent many, many years like that, just loving each other and being each other's company. And then, probably about three and a half years ago, she got sick. She wasn't eating well. She had lost a lot of weight. Her litter box habits changed. There was some vomiting. So I took her to the vet. Of course, we can't figure out what the problem is. So I called Janet. Because you're my go-to. So, we did a little work together and invited Martha to join us. And through some time and some specialists and some good technology, we figured out that probably what she had was some sort of IBS, IBD situation. So I had to determine how far I wanted to take the diagnostic process. The only way to definitively know whether it was a type of cancer or IBD was to put her through an abdominal surgery to get a biopsy. And she was probably 12-ish at that time. So she was a little bit older, and I was wary of putting her through something like that. Basically, she'd have to do a colonoscopy prep. Like for anyone who's had a colonoscopy, that's not a fun thing. And I can't imagine doing that to my favorite companion. That just seemed cruel. So I decided not to do that. And we just treated her as if she had IBD, tried to change her diet. And so she had a way of letting me know what she would and would not tolerate, if you will.
That's fascinating what you just said, that she had a way of letting me know. And
Yes.
yeah, knowing Martha, she did. Okay. But
She
also,
did.
it's just, hello, this is Martha. Here I am. This is what I think you should do. But also, that speaks very much to how much you listened to her and didn't discount her because she was just a cat. And understand
Oh
I'm speaking
no.
colonized language in here. This is not the
Yes.
relationship you two had by any stretch of the imagination. But I think it takes sometimes a lot of courage and a lot of fortitude for the human to say, Okay, the vets suggested this, 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 and this, and this, and this is what my cat is telling me. And so I'm going to listen to my cat.
I
Okay.
did, and that's it was a difficult choice to make because I thought, well, do I listen to Martha or what I think she's trying to tell me, or do I follow the best practices that have been presented to me? And I really did not believe she would want to be subjected to surgeries or anything like that. I just felt like that was just too much. And so then they said, well, if you don't want to do that, then her diet has to change. She needs a special diet, blah, blah, blah. So I spent hundreds, if not thousands of dollars trying to find a food that she would like and would willingly eat and wouldn't create distress for both of us at meal times. And she refused all of that. She refused all of it. And our local animal shelter got a lot of really high dollar, high quality cat food donated to them because she wanted Fancy Feast.
There
Period.
you go.
End of story. She would not eat anything else. And so I thought, well, I either starve her to death trying to get her to eat this other stuff, or I give her what she'll eat. And then we manage the symptoms. And so that's what we did.
Yes, I hear you on that for sure. I really do. And it gets to the point also, I think, that it's like you say, you either manage the systems or create, I'm paraphrasing what you said. Or create stress not only for the cat but in the relationship between the two of you. And so to me, it sounds, that you did everything that you could to keep her healthy, steady, safe, and as Martha could be, while doing all of these things that were not the traditional. And
And it was a challenge, certainly.
took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to ask you to say more about that. Can you say more about that, please, Stacy?
Challenge, challenge, challenge. Yeah, I mean, it took me a long time, several months, to basically throw in my towel with the food. I really, we had a lot of conversations about it. I begged her, I pleaded, please, 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 please. And she just would eat it a couple of times. And so then I would buy a case of it. And then the case would come and she would say, no, thank you.
Isn't it amazing how they do that right after you get that case of food? Everything is hunky-dory. The case comes, it's like, nope, not eating it. Nope.
Suddenly this is subpar and I'm not eating it.
And I know that you went through all this trouble to get it. And frankly, thank you very much, but no, thank you.
Right. And, might I add, all of this was during the pandemic. This all started when the
Wowzers.
pandemic started. So, just getting any diagnostics and specialists, getting in with any of them was a challenge. And then, how are we going to get this food here? So, Chewy and I developed a great relationship. They got it here fast and, when I needed it and often as I needed it. But yeah, just everything about the situation was a challenge to me and to her.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying for sure. And how is that to be in true kinship, or is it in true kinship when there's a challenge like
I
that?
think, I feel like if you are in true kinship with your animal friend, then you approach a challenge like you would, a partner or a spouse or a sibling. You work together to resolve whatever the challenge is. So, I think our deal basically was if you'll continue trying to live, I'll continue trying to help you live, whatever that looks like.
Yes, and that takes a lot of courage, I think, on the human's part.
Yeah, I was just going to say it took some courage and I really had to talk myself into it,
Do you care to share what that was like for you?
again, a challenge. I just had to constantly remind myself that this isn't my body. This isn't my life. This isn't my perspective. This is about her and how to give her the best quality and quantity of life that I could possibly give to her.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And you know what, Stacey? Probably I should have asked you this at the very beginning, but what does true kinship mean to you?
Oh, goodness. Well, I think that as a human living with an animal, sharing a life with an animal, we have a job, we have a responsibility. We need to keep them safe. We need to keep them sheltered, fed. We need to make sure that their health care needs are met. These are things that, when they're living in a home with a human, they can't do by themselves. So it's a little bit of a job on the human's part, but also, knowing that in caring for the animals, keeping in mind that they're sentient, they have their own opinions, their own ideas about how their lives should be and how they want to live them. They have boundaries just like people. So just trying to keep all of that in perspective with myself as we move through our lives together.
Did you find that there were changes you had to make within yourself to live that out, to help Martha with her agency, to see her agency, to witness it, to recognize it?
I've always felt that we're all connected in a deep and special way. I mean, just all things, not just Martha and I, but all things. So I have worked on, even pre-Martha coming into my life, being aware of that and trying to put aside what I think something should be, and instead letting something be what it should be without my intervention.
That's a mouthful. That is
It
truly a mouthful, you know? Okay, let's go down that rabbit hole.
Okay.
Are you willing to go down that rabbit hole?
I'm willing to go. Let's go.
All right, I got my breadcrumbs ready just in case.
Okay. That's a good idea.
Seriously. So, what does that look like for you to let someone, something, some sentient being have its own agency to show up as it is? That is not definite, that is not in perhaps your definition, my definition of what it should be, what the relationship should be.
I think an example of that would be, if you were to call a dog or a horse or a cat or any animal to you and expect them to come, for example. I think for me, it is important that they come to me. I sort of try and show them however I can that I'm available. Available for some sort of interaction. And if they would like to take part in that, come on over. Let's explore that together.
Yeah, and in that exploration, there is just so many new discoveries to be found. Like I know when, oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Like when dog Maxie was at the end of his lifetime, and we would go out for these walks, and he used to like his idea of a walk used to be just take off running and there you go. And towards the end of his life, you know, his idea of a walk was to just stand out in the wind here in Montana and let it literally blow his ears back and literally try to blow his body over. But whenever, you know, we're with aging animals and we see them change like that, that requires a change within us too, of adapting to who they are and how they are showing up in the world as best they can in an aging body. And Maxie used to get like really quite upset with me when I'd say, it's too windy to go outside. He looked at me like, frankly, it's like, and, you know, what do you mean here? What is this thing you call too windy?
Right, says you.
Says you, yeah, seriously. But it's also like, it's not, I wasn't necessarily putting myself aside and my wants aside, but I was, oh gosh, I don't even know how to put this. I was trying to,
Perhaps elevating his needs.
thank you. Thank you. I love
You're
people who are
welcome.
so succinct, you know? Here I am, neurodivergent and Aquarius, and I'm just ramble, 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 ramble. And then you put that so succinctly. Thank you. But there's a change, not in the structure of the relationship, I think, but the depth of the relationship when that starts to happen.
Yeah, and I think just acknowledging, I think it's hard for us when we see another human, one of our animal companions aging and living in a body that's beginning to fail them. It's really difficult to witness, just really difficult to witness. And you want to make it all better, and you want to like, you have to do this, you have to do that, and then you'll feel better. And you just really need to, well, I shouldn't say you just, I just really needed to step back and say, okay, it's
Yeah.
not about what I think she needs. It's about what she thinks she needs.
Yeah. Yeah. And that for me, that got extremely difficult at the end because I wanted to extend Max's life. I knew what was coming. He knew what was coming. Raven, Cat Raven knew what was coming. And there was a part of me that wanted to just, let's try one more thing. Let's try one more thing. And I know I expressed that to him a couple of times, but with the way he reacted to that, with the way Raven looked at me like, what are you doing here? This is going the way it needs to go. It almost called me to put on my big girl panties and just step up and just go, okay, this is what Max wants. This is Raven is agreeing with him. And I am the only one who is saying, hey, wait, maybe we should do things differently. And when I put it in that perspective, it was easier for me to look at and to change my behavior.
I mean, and I think that change in our behavior is what really makes the last few days, hours, minutes, whatever you have left, so sweet and so special with them, because you've given yourself over to what will be. You don't have a choice.
You do have a choice, but when you want to look at it, you do have a choice. And I also hear very much what you're saying. There, the choice is the one that is made by you, animal family members, instead of me, what colonized society says I should do. And the vets that we worked with here, just so incredible, so lucky to have found that and to have worked with her and to have someone in that profession supporting that when I was saying, okay, this is Maxie's time is up, Raven's time is up.
I think the support from the veterinary community is so important for us. Maybe not as much for them, except in the final act. If you end up having to euthanize your friend, but I think having us supported, several times, because I've had so many pass in the last 2 months, different vets have said, if for what it's worth, I think you're doing the right thing. I think we are at the end of what we can do here.
And
And that helps.
that helps. That helps because we're human. We need human support. We need human witnessing during these last times together. And for me, with the animals that I've helped cross, my own animals, family that I've helped cross over, I feel like I've practiced for that, helping them cross over with I don't know how many animals. And still, each time it feels like it's the first time.
It
And
does.
each time it's also like, I know I've practiced this before, but I forgot what I practiced. So I just have to do this blindly, so to speak.
Well, and also, I mean, it is the first time you've done it with that animal. It's not the same every time. I too have had to cross over several animals, and it's never the same. It's never the same.
I
But it's
am in.
always hard.
Pardon me?
I said, but it's always hard.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And to this day, Raven passed over, gosh, when was it? Summertime, summer solstice. And to this day, it's like there are times when I think I still see him
Oh, yeah.
or I still, feel him around, or I find myself talking to him or stepping over him. And to me,
Yes.
that's part of life. That's the part of the way it is.
Yeah, I had a dream about Martha just the other night. As a matter of fact, I had a dream about you and
Oh my
Martha.
gosh. Oh my gosh.
Like together.
Hello, Martha.
So,
How are you doing?
it was just very strange for me to see physically see the two of you together, and you were sort of, reclined on a sofa or whatnot on your side, and she was curled up in front of you, and I was like, oh, hey guys,
Hey, let's
what's
hang out
happening
together.
here?
Thank you
So
for sharing that. Yeah.
yeah, I thought that was kind of unique. I didn't expect that.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Stacy, for everything you've been saying. I think our listening audience will find it really helpful to get the different perspectives on what it's like to be with animals and helping them pass over. One question I have for you is, how does your cosmology play into all of this?
Janet, I know I'm a Cancer. I'm a moon girl. That's kind of all I know about, my cosmology, astrology, etc. But I can say, and I don't know if this is a Cancer thing, I'm a feeler. I'm a feeler, in my body. I'm a feeler in my soul. I'm a feeler of just general energy. So I'm real feely. I'm just real feely.
That's really interesting because I look at, astrology can definitely be a part of a cosmology or a cosmology itself, how we look at the world. And it's interesting also what you said about being feely, because my understanding, and pretty much with astrology, I know enough to get myself in trouble, but my understanding is that that's how cancers operate as feelers and as nesting. And it's making it comfortable and, taking
Yes.
care of family.
Yeah, I'm a nurturer. Like that's
Yeah.
my jam.
Yeah. And, with that nurturing, how did you see that taking place with Martha?
Well, I mean, I would do absolutely positively anything that I thought she might want. And I kind of do that for everybody, frankly, that I
Yeah.
but it was just, if I thought it would possibly make her feel better, physically or emotionally, I would give it. If that meant coming out in the middle of the night when I knew she was having a rough spell and just sleeping on the couch for a couple of hours with her, that's what I do. Things like that.
Yeah, and I think it's important to say too that with our cosmology, our astrology, it's different for each and every one of us. It's fair to say that what works for one person might not work for another. And that does not mean that you are not walking in true kinship by any stretch of the imagination. What I find absolutely flabbergasting about true kinship is that it's different for every person, it's different with every animal, it's different with every relationship. And so it's like each one takes on a life of its own. And as the human, we respond to that individuality of the relationship having a life of its own in the way that the lens that we use at looking through the world. And doing the best that we can.
And I think, it's important to acknowledge we are all doing the best that we can.
Oh, humdinger, yes.
Even when you feel like maybe you're not, you are. You're working with the tools that you have in that moment on that day, and that's the best you've got.
That's the best you've got. And we're recording this on a Tuesday, and my time it's 3:52. Well, Wednesday at 3:52, it could be totally different for both of us.
Oh, yeah.
And just like, okay, well, that's changed. Now I need to adjust here, or I need to do something to a little bit differently here. And I think that that is one place where the animals, maybe they have an advantage over us. I'm not sure that I'm saying this correctly, but they are more able to go with the flow. depending on the domestication and, all that kind of stuff. But as an umbrella statement, that they are conditioned to go with the flow more than we humans are.
Well, I think they're just better at accepting radical acceptance, if you will. Like, it is what it is, and whatever it is, that's what they work with, where we try to manipulate it and change it for our own
Make it
benefit.
better. Make it better. And sometimes making it better totally gets in the way of what is.
Oh, it makes it so much worse.
Oh my gosh. On Raven's last day, he knew it was the last day. I knew it was the last day. The vet knew it was the last day. We're all on the same page. And it was still difficult for me not to say, well, maybe if we try this. And thank heavens for Raven and his genius and wisdom and knowing me, and he'd look at me and go, no, just no. This is the day it is, and this is the way it is, and this is how we're going to do it.
I mean, I will say with Martha, she was sick for so long with one thing, but that's not ultimately what caused her death. She started breathing funny, she sounded like she was snoring all the time. I of course took her in to the vet to be seen. Well, we don't see anything. We don't see anything. And it's something that just progressed and progressed. And I had noticed a couple of times, probably within the last year of her life, she had had just a little bit of a bloody nose, like just maybe just a little bit of pink discharge on her little white nose. And I was like, I just poo-pooed it. I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to acknowledge that there could be a problem. It didn't happen all the time. So I ignored it. I ignored it. And then, when she started snoring, even when she was awake, I was like, I think I know exactly what this is. And so she gave me plenty of signs, she stopped eating, she stopped drinking, she was hiding, she was sleeping, all those things. But the day that she passed away, that the vet was coming, she got up and drank a bunch of water and like perked up. And so I felt like, when the vet came to our home to cross her over, I thought, oh, maybe it's not time. Maybe it's not time. And I really played the human card here because I was like, you know what? I know what's coming for you. If I cancel this today, I know what's coming. And I just could not bear to put her through that, even if she had wanted to be there a few more days. And that is not kinshipy at all.
It should be love it.
But I just felt like I really knew what was happening. And I'm sure she did too. But I didn't know how fast whatever this was growing inside of her head was going to grow. I mean, it had definitely progressed quickly. And I just could not bear the thought. I just couldn't bear the thought of waiting longer for it to cause more distress for her and me.
Did you ever get the feeling from her that she wanted you to do something different?
It's so hard to say, when they gave her the anesthetic, to sort of make her really sleepy, she fought it a little bit in the beginning. And I don't know if that's reflex and instinct on her part, or if she was saying, no, I don't know. And so I have to live with that. Did I make the right call? Ultimately, I made the right call. Did I make the right call at the right time is the question I have, I think, for myself.
Yeah, and I think we all live with that. I think that's a very common thing. My personal take on it is that if it hadn't been the right call, then it wouldn't have gone as it did. She would have been around a few days longer, or a few hours longer. There's when we are at the end of the journey of our time together with our animal family members, there's so much that I don't know. I just feel like I kind of have to like throw it up in the air and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was something that I hope she understood the timing that I chose. I mean, I know because we did it at home, she was in my lap. I made sure that I was the last thing she saw before she closed her eyes. I wanted her to know how
And
loved
felt.
she was. Yes.
She felt you too. And I
Yeah,
don't mean
yeah.
just the physical, I mean the whole essence of you.
Yeah, I mean, I positioned her in the position that we always kept on the couch together, you know, heart to heart, and that's how she passed, is, you know, up against my chest. And so it was a beautiful passing, but I do sometimes think, oh, did I do it too? Oh, I don't know. Oh, and I think that's with some of my animals, I've thought that, and with some, I have not. But I do question it with her because she, you know as well as I do, she would rally and bounce back and be great for 6 months.
She was the queen of that.
She was Lazarus.
Absolutely. I can honestly say
Time.
I've never experienced another animal like her.
Nor have I. I mean, she was so good at that. And so I think that's why I struggled so hard this last time, but it was a little bit different. You know, she acted a little bit differently for longer. And I just felt like, oh, perhaps she was ready to go, but maybe I'm not, you know, like that.
Ah,
Maybe
I
she
hear you
was
on that.
hesitating. I don't
Yeah,
know.
I hear you on that. I think that's where supportive vet medical care comes in handy.
Yes. Oh
I
my gosh.
remember, one of the last visits that Raven had with his vet. I was talking to her and I said, "Am I imagining this?" And she goes, "No, you're not." And it's not only the words she said, it was the way she said it. And the way that Raven looked at me when I asked that question, like, "Well, hello, Janet, come on, get with the program here." But it's again, it goes back to the witnessing and the support that we as humans need from other humans.
No, I was going to say, you know, Martha had done one of her little rallying things a few weeks before. And so we were, you know, really happy and excited about that. And so when I contacted the vet again, she's like, oh, really? We really hoped we'd get more mileage out of that rally.
Yeah.
And so she said, you know, I understand where you're coming from. If this is your decision, I fully support what you're doing. So I never felt like I did it too soon, like overall big picture, symptomatically speaking. I just worry about too soon for her taste or for her desire, perhaps.
I don't think I knew you with dog Teddy, who got me into animal communication.
No,
Okay. Teddy was just this wonderful little dog that I adopted. He came into our family and he was 8 years old when he came into the family. And so first thing he did was pee and poop all over the house. And then, it's like, oh, what have I adopted here? Of course he's got a medical problem, or of course it's a training problem. And it wasn't. It was just Teddy being Teddy. And worked through that. That's how I got into animal communication. But the moral of the story here is in Teddy's last, literally his last day, he was scheduled to have surgery the upcoming week. And he didn't last that long. So I took him into the vet and made arrangements to have him transition. And I was with him at the time. And he just became this little hellion, for lack of a better word. He didn't want to cross over and all of this good stuff. And he was biting at me and he was biting at the vets, which totally unlike him. And so I kind of overrode him and I checked in with his higher self. And the higher self said, "No, it's time for him to go. This is time." And that was really hard because what I'm seeing in the physical, what I'm getting intuitively, emotionally, and in essence, is that it's time for him to go. And so I would say it was maybe 3 months later after that, that Teddy connected with me And he said that he was really glad that I overrode him, that he just didn't want to leave life. And even though he knew it was time, he was putting up a fuss. But he was still glad that I talked to his higher self and made the decision, which was against his wishes at the time. So it's a challenge to know what's going on. And I think that not having role models into what death looks like in our society, from my perspective, growing up, it was when you're dead and gone. And that was it. And so, of course, you do everything you can to fight that. But to not having role models to help us experience that death as part of life, it gets really hard. It gets really
It
hard.
does. It does. And thank you so much for sharing that story about Teddy, because I hope I close my eyes tonight and have a dream about her and she tells me the same. Like, that would make my day and certainly make me feel much better. Again, I know it was the right choice, but the timing, I worry about the timing.
I hear you on that. And I think also that that's part of our where we are as a society when it comes to death. It's like extended just one more minute, extended just 5 more minutes, extended just 2 more weeks, extended here, extended there. Because as our society, I feel as if we are told that we must make it better without being told that making it better sometimes means releasing and letting go.
I think the emphasis in medicine, be it veterinary medicine or human medicine, is to, quantity, 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 quantity of life. And I think the quality sometimes gets lost in that push for quantity.
And that's their gig. That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to, they're doing their job. It's just, from my perspective, the definition of what the job is and what death looks like in our society is changing. And we need to kind of keep up with that change, and it's hard.
I mean, I will say, again, we've had to transition 3 animals in a row in a
That's
very short
incredible.
amount of time. And each experience was with a different vet, and each experience was compassionate, kind. The vets were as concerned about what would be most comfortable for each of the animals in those moments. So I feel like it's come a long way from where it used to be, and that, we actually consider, or someone besides, us ourselves considers, the needs of the animal that we love so much. They love the animals too.
I know that there are, and the former vet office I worked with here, they would have a candle going in the waiting room, and if the candle was going, please be quiet. And for I've experienced over time more aftercare from vets. I think with the first animal, I didn't even think of it as crossing over. It was just like, I'm going to take her to the vet and they're going to put her down and there you go, which was the way I was taught, And so I think that that has changed in so many ways. And the support that I have gotten afterwards, after Max and Raven and after Shiloh, of course, Shiloh left, it's just been incredibly different and incredibly helpful. And I'm not a person who cries, but whenever I get like the ashes back, or whenever I get that note like 4 weeks later or 3 weeks later or whatever from the vet, and I thought that I'm okay, I can get through this. And then I see this and I just start crying. And it's just like, Are there any questions you have for me?
Well, I'm interested in knowing how it is you communicate with your animal companions and come to the conclusion together that it's time to cross over.
That's a really good question. The animal companions I've had particularly in later years, I'd say in the last 10, 15 years, there is a wisdom in them that goes beyond what I can ever hope to have. And so it's me listening to their wisdom. And when I say listening, yeah, I listen intuitively, but I also listen with my eyes to their body language. And I also listen to the moans and groans and the aches and everything that they have. I think that, well, one of the things that I have that I find really helpful personally is I have a quality of life sheet. And whenever one of the animals was getting ready to pass over, I pull that out and I'm holding that in my hand, and that's my support. And I'm looking at that, you know, how are they eating? What would their quality of life look like if we extended this? And I remember with Raven talking to the vet, and you know, we were saying, yeah, you know, he can go ahead. And as we're talking about this, he's like really giving me the evil eye, like, come on, you know, why are you having this conversation? But we
I'm
humans,
right here. I can hear
I
you.
can hear you and I have my plan ready, and you're getting in my way again. Let's do this. But I think when it comes to true kinship, we have to remember it's not only for the animals, it's with ourselves. And sometimes as humans, we can forget that true kinship is with ourselves and for ourselves sometimes. So I needed to ask these questions. I needed to hear the answers. You know, and she said, sure, you know, it wouldn't be postponing it for that long, but you know, keep in mind kitty litter, what that's going to look like, because his back leg is given out, how you're going to have to help him, and you know, the how I would have to be cleaning and all of this stuff. And so I got that information. And even though at the time I knew that what would happen, I still needed to hear that because it was almost like an after effect of saying, it's okay, Janet. It was a different way to say, it's okay. One of the things that helps me with the animals that I might own have, animal family members, the animal family members, is that I get really quiet and I step back from activity. I step back from being. I step back from myself. And I do this physically and I do it energetically. And I sit with the animals and my mind basically becomes a whiteboard. And I sit and I sit and I listen and I wait. And then for me, it comes over like a flood. I feel it. I embody it. It's like, yes, this is the time.
Yeah, that's interesting to me.
And, you know, it's not something that I could do for the first time with an animal that passed. It's like, this is based upon years of experience and years of practice. And for someone who doesn't cry, years of trying not to cry and not succeeding at that. But it's also a stepping back from the energy of the collective and making it a very intimate connection between me and the animal.
I'm curious because when Martha, in particular, I miss all of the animals that have passed, and I love them all, but Martha and I just had a different kind of relationship than I have with any of my other animals that live here. And so when she left, and even before she left, when I knew that she would be leaving, I can physically feel it, like in my heart and in my chest. It's like a breaking open. It's a almost a physical feeling for me, and it's just like, boy, that cracks open and everything just comes spilling out, and it's very hard for me to pack it back in, sew
I
it
hear
back
you on
up.
that. Recently, I read something, and I don't remember where I read it. I wrote down the sentence, but I didn't write down the source, of course. But what they were talking about was sentience without substance. And that just really struck me because that's where I feel with the animal family that I've had through the years, that's where we're at. It comes and goes. You know, because they're doing their thing on the other side of the Rainbow Bridge or whatever you want to call it. I'm doing my thing. But there's a meeting where there's this sentience and it just happens to be without substance. And to me, I find that comforting.
I just think, wow, is this all me that I'm feeling, or is this a mixture of her and me that I feel. I don't know, but it's a very raw and
Yeah.
emotional experience to have. It's just like when they say heartbreak, I get it.
Yeah,
Yes.
exactly. And I think it's different again for each person, each animal, each relationship.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah.
just really incredible. Stacey, thank you so much for being with us today. This has been, as you said earlier, a challenging conversation and a difficult conversation and a necessary conversation. And so I thank
Thank
you
you.
for doing that and
Thank
being with
you.
us.
Thank you for allowing me to come on and talk about my companions and my love for the animals. And I just appreciate everything you've done for not only myself, but my animals as well. You've witnessed quite a bit here recently, so thank you.
Yeah, you betcha. You betcha. Here's an invitation for you to join me and other kindred spirits on this path of true kinship with animals. My work is devoted to helping you show up in the world for animals from the fullness of your authentic self. I hope this encourages you to look at your relationship with animals differently so that a new place of understanding begins to open for you. I hope you're enjoying the new segment, Stories from Listeners. If you have a true kinship story, how about submitting it for consideration? There are so many stories just waiting to be heard and told. If you have a story, contact me at the link on the show page and let's talk. If you enjoy and/or benefit from this podcast, become a financial supporter. Your financial support makes my work sustainable and allows me to continue providing you with the guests and life-changing information you hear on this podcast. Support my work by making a financial contribution, and you will find that at janetroper.com. Making a financial contribution shows your appreciation and is greatly welcomed. Thank you for your continued support and for listening to this podcast. Just for today, remember, do what you can to interrupt genocide. Until next time, take good care.